Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, I'm joined by Al Reynolds. We have a surprise guest, and Chris Tobin is along, of course. I'm at WAMU at American University. We're going to be talking about, though, visual radio and what we learned yesterday at a symposium put on by New Bay Media. That's coming up on This Week in Radio Tech.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by BSW and the Morevember sale, where you do get more for less. Save up to 45% more cash on more great gear for a more powerful performance. By the Telos VX VoIP talk show system, now used by local and network television broadcasters to streamline workflows and provide perfect communication with remote crews. And by the new Ruby console from Lavvo, with AutoMix smart mixing and a context-sensitive user interface. See Lavvo in your future at lavvo.com/twert.
Hey, everybody. Welcome into This Week in Radio Tech. It's time for another great episode of the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to the light bulb at the top of the tower and everything in between. Today, we're talking about the amazing subject of visual radio and whatever else came across our desk in the last 48 hours. Hi, it's Kirk Harnack here on This Week in Radio Tech, along with Chris Tobin. And our guest, Al Reynolds, is here. Yeah, he's in the studio here at WAMU. Actually, I'm in his studio at WAMU. Well, actually, let me tell you where we are right now. So we're in Washington, D.C., and yesterday, in association or at the same time as the Government Video Expo, New Bay Media, that is Radio World Magazine and Radio Magazine, put on a symposium about visual radio. And I came because my buddy Dan McQuillan from Broadcast Bionics was going to be there talking on a panel, and he did a great job. And I walk in the room, and who do I see but this guy who's going to appear on your screen next, Chris Tobin. Are you still eating that pastrami sandwich?
I'm having a pastrami sandwich for those of you who didn't get to see the sausage being made, you know, traditional New York delicacy from a New York delicatessen. Yes, you got to have some good stuff. However, I'm told it's not healthy, so there's a disclaimer. It's not healthy. I don't recommend it. I'm not endorsing it. For myself, though, since I control my health, I'm going for it. Hello, Kirk.
Hasn't your mayor banned those yet?
Don't give him any ideas, please. don't go there.
I'm guessing you could not. Yeah, go ahead.
Guessing what?
I'm guessing you could not order a super Slurpee along with that. You had to order three small Slurpees.
Oh, no, we're okay with the soft drinks. The previous administration lost on that one, so we're okay.
Oh, okay. So yeah. You can buy big soft drinks now again in New York?
Yeah. Common sense reigns for now. We'll see what happens.
Okay. Well, so I walk into the symposium room, and who's there dressed in a suit and tie looking entirely dapper? It's Chris Tobin. And so he didn't see me come in. So I sneaked up behind him and grabbed him. Not quite Al Franken style, but kind of surprised him. But he was okay. I said, "Hey, buddy, how you doing?" So it was a surprise to see you. Tell me what brought you down to the D.C. in the symposium.
What brought me to, first of all, the skull cap is just a takeaway from yesterday's event. I have to give credit to Buck and his marketing people. So I'm just going to say that this is the fun part. And then to be fair, then the other folks that did a nice job of letting people know they were there, folks from Comrex. So those are my two takeaways, physical takeaways from the event. Intellectual property takeaways. What brought me to the Visual Radio Symposium, which is what I believe it was named, was the fact that it was finally someone officially on the record for an event, for a gathering, was putting out there saying, hey, radio industry, you shouldn't be overlooking this other element that could help you market, continue to grow, advance your business model and do things of that nature. I mean, we've been talking about it for years. There's been all kinds of talks, different shows. You can go to NAB. It's a multimedia event. It's MET. It's this, that, and the other. But there's no real focus. And yesterday's event, when I looked at the agenda and then the panelists, I said, this is perfect. I'm going to check it out. So it was well worth it. If those of you didn't make it, you missed a good event.
Is this the first such symposium that they had? This kind of got the conversation started, at least by New Bay Media, about the idea of visual radio.
Yep. Yes, I actually was fortunate enough to come down on the Amtrak, and Eric Traub, who works for New Media, he's one of the executives at New Media, and he was explaining to me it was something they wanted to do. The problem is you can't just have a standalone event like this that's never been done before and expect it to be able to do it right. So they – dovetailed it with the Government Video Expo, knowing that there are people who come to the Government Video Expo that have understanding of video, radio, TV, broadcast, you name it, content creation. So they thought, why not give it a try? And from what he told me, they got a very positive response. The RSVPs, the people who signed up for, you know, it's a couple of bucks, you go in. They were very happy with it. Now, does it, you know, did it, was it a stellar event where it broke all the records for, you know, gatherings of trade shows? Of course not. It's the first time out. But I have to credit New Bay, Paul McLean, John Casey, and Eric Traub for saying, hey, you know what? This needs to be done. Let's see what happens. It's a new industry. It's a whole new, I shouldn't say new industry. It's a, the industry is changing. There's a lot of disruptive events taking place, as Dan likes to say, Dan McQuillan. So I would think that they should be very happy and do not use the metrics of other trade shows over the years to try and say this was good or bad for bad numbers. And I think the next step would be to do another one, say maybe in New York City or maybe Chicago or somewhere else with a large area and say, hey, give it a try and see what happens from that.
Is that my phone?
I think that's Chris.
Oh, it's Chris's phone?
No, that's my phone. Believe it or not,
I was just getting a scam call, and I thought maybe it had gone to another device of mine. I don't know. Anyway, really, two in a row now? Come on! All right, so Chris, we're going to get into telling our audience, sharing with our tort audience some of the things that we got to hear about it. That's different ideas, and of course, a lot of people have different ideas about what is visual radio, what's going to work in the future. So this gentleman right here, Al Reynolds, was at this event as well, as were some of your colleagues from WAMU. And by the way, first of all, let me introduce Al Reynolds, WAMU engineer, and we're in a studio here at WAMU in Washington, D.C. A lot of folks know WAMU for the Diane Rehm Show.
Mm-hmm. That is correct.
And for Kojo Nandi.
Yep, the Kojo Nandi Show is our local news talk politics show.
Yeah.
And then this year we launched the 1A with Joshua Johnson, which is the replacement for the Diane Rehm Show, which has been very successful, mm-hmm. and we're all very happy with it, and for Joshua. So it's been a fun ride, and I joined in here in March. So, yeah.
You've just been here since March?
Just since March, yep.
Wow, and you found your way out of that huge tech center.
I found my way out of that huge tech center, yes. It took a few tries.
I wish we could show it to you. I got a tour just before this show of the tech center. We're going to get on with the show here in just a minute. We got three sponsors, and I want to thank our friends at BSW Broadcast Supply Worldwide for being a sponsor. They are just terrific for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech, and I do appreciate it. We take a look at their website that talks about the Movember sale, and you know it's almost over. Is today the last day of November?
I believe today is the last day of November.
This may be the last day of Movember, so you need to see what you need and give them a shout. You can order online today, and in fact, those of you watching the show or listening to the show live, and even if you're not listening to the show live, you can order up until 7 p.m. Eastern time any day, and if you need that product and they've got it in stock, you can have it the next day. Why? Because BSW, even though their corporate office is off on the West Coast near Tacoma, Washington, they have a warehouse. Why stock everything in Tacoma on the West Coast when you can stock it in the middle of the country? They have a stocking warehouse in Columbus, Ohio. So that means if you order a Wheatstone mic processor or a JK Audio hybrid, an Orban audio processor, if you order just all number of things, you can get things the next day. I've done that before. I have forgotten that, oh my gosh, I need a rack shelf to put the CD player on. And I would end up getting it the next day because I ordered it before 7 p.m. Well, it's the Movember sale. You can get up to 45% off during the Movember sale. And I guess today is the last day of it. For example, you can save literally $2,000 on Orban's Optimod FM 8700. It offers advanced processing for both analog FM and digital media. You get clean, punchy sound to grab more listeners and more advertisers and make your station stand out. It's just $12,990, and this is for the big boy, the Optimod FM 8700i. Check that out. If you're a podcaster or you want to do simple audio shows, you can get a 10% instant discount on any of their 6 podcasting packages. They have a loaded Tascam US-32 or US-42 mini studio audio interface bundled with top quality mics, headphones, and more. Just enter the code US-10 at checkout for a total savings on when you add the 10% discount, a total savings of up to 45%. And finally, you're a voiceover person. If you, or you know somebody who is, maybe you're an engineer who needs to help somebody out who does VO work, check out the different packages that are endorsed by Joe Cipriano. You can choose from five different packages, including two featuring Joe's exact studio and travel setups, starting as low as $559. Just check that out at the website. Go to bswusa.com. That's bswusa.com, and check it out there. And you, if you, like I said, if you order by 7 o'clock tonight, well, then you can have it tomorrow or 2 day or 3 day, whatever you want to pay for on the shipping. But it's a great deal. So thanks a lot to BSW Broadcast Supply Worldwide for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right. So this visual radio, this idea of visual radio, and, you know, for some years, a few stations around the world here and there have been doing things like live video streaming their morning show, afternoon show, maybe things that are in popular in drive time, special shows. Maybe they go out and do a, you know, local stations. They do a high school football game, and not only do the radio broadcast, but people want to see it. So they do a simplistic, typically a simplistic video webcast of that. And so it's seeming like being visual has some benefits for radio. I know there are purists out there who say, no, we don't need that. It's just it's something we don't need. But a number of points, Chris, were made about the need for streaming, not just audio, but video too. And I guess there's a couple schools of thought on this. And Chris, I'd like to hear your thoughts on this. Some people think, well, I need to stream everything we do. Put a camera in the studio and to stream everything, or put switching cameras in the studio and stream everything. And other folks are saying, you know, it's not so important to stream everything. What's important is to get the social media clips, the cool things that happen during your show, and cut them up and post them on social media, inviting people to listen to the whole show the next day or later that day. So Chris, kind of, if you could, that was my little summary. What's your little summary of what, where we stand in visual radio?
Well, I would agree with you on that. You know, doing the entire show or the entire broadcast day doesn't make any sense, especially if you're a music station. And unless you're a spoken word station that has some really compelling guests, maybe people would love to sit in and watch as a, you know, like a POV, a point of view camera shot, like a fly on the wall, and watch and listen. But those are, that's a tough one at times too. I think what we need as an industry, people have to start rethinking, is how we do our business again. One of the things I observed with the panelists regarding content, I did not hear anyone talk about who was the one person or persons maybe that had the vision of what the station was trying to accomplish. What I did hear is that a lot of silos are created inside the stations that call themselves the digital strategies, digital media, digital sales, and then they seem to take it upon themselves to tell the programming part of the radio station, here's what we need, and here's what we want to create the image that we're doing. And I always thought, well, that's all well and good, but the program director, the programming people that sort of have the vision and the guidance and where they want to go to get the end game, which is, you know, put a product out that it makes money at the end of the day and everybody's having fun doing it. A lot of the things I heard, comments I should say I heard, gave me the impression that programming wasn't at the table. It was more like, hey, I'm the digital social person, and, you know, I need you to do this. Like somebody did mention on the panel, you know, they started talking about something that was really great, but I only had 10 seconds to try and get it out. It's like, well, see, that's the problem. You should have already been aware of that particular element coming up, because if you're a part of the programming cycle, you'd know that's what goes on, so you'd be prepared for it. And I've seen this happen even in places I've worked with on part-time basis and some contract work, but there's a disconnect. And I think that needs to change, because one of the panelists was talking about how they have to make their numbers to get sales. And there was a question from the audience about what if my account executive salespeople are older demo, you know, the undesirable demo, the ones that don't pay attention to anymore. How do I engage them in this whole new thing? And the response I heard was not one of saying, understand the product we're trying to put out, know what our vision is. It was more of like, what do you do at home? Well, what does your family, how they use this device we call the smartphone or smart device? And it's like, yeah, but that's not what you should be doing. What you should be saying is, how are they using this with our product or brand, if you want to be, you know, nasty about it? How are they using this? And that didn't come up in conversation. And if that's what was meant, it didn't sound like it. And I've noticed that in a lot of places I've worked at where nobody does that. It's literally separate groups of people trying to come together. And at the end of the day, they look at the website, the analytics, and go, oh, we missed it, or we could be doing better. I'm like, yeah, but where's the vision? Because remember, this particular device, we'll use the little logo so you know what I'm talking about, had a visionary that brought it to market and forced it and made sure everybody on the team, meaning the entire group at that building or buildings, knew what was the goal, and they did it. Yesterday's panelists, some of them, I mean, all the panelists were great. Don't get me wrong. Every one of them was a great moment, and I got some great information out of it and learned a lot. But I believe what I'm hearing, and I'm noticing this in reading articles, there's nobody with the vision guiding all of these, you know, horses that take the coach and bring it down the road. It seems like they're all separately running. And I think that's where we're running into. That's why people who have their YouTube channel get, you know, a million views and make money. And people go, oh, all they had was a webcam, a laptop, and they were sitting on a park bench. Yeah, that wasn't the point. The point was what they were talking about, what they brought to the table. That was their
vision.
Remember that person in the audience, that guy was talking about what he does? He does everything himself. If you listen carefully to his questioning and his preaching of what he does, it was his vision. He was talking about his vision, and that's what he does. That's how he brings his vision to life. I heard nothing like that on the panel, except Dan did talk about that. Dan and Chris Crump did make those comments sort of on the technical side. They were talking about the technical, and you need to have that vision to make it work.
So what I sure noticed about this conversation, and it's a tough conversation to start. It's kind of like coming to a party, and you're all there because you all got invited, but nobody knows anybody. Nobody knows anybody else there. And so you had a whole bunch of people from the radio business and from some manufacturers, software writers, and they all came together yesterday. And it was, if not the first, one of the first conversations that people were having about visual radio. And so it's the kind of thing that's going to take a number of conversations. Like if I met Al for the first time, which, you know, yesterday was the first time I met Al, and Al may have some interesting hobbies or things that I don't know about yet, and that I won't know about that thing that we can talk about more until I talk to Al some more. So until we have a number of conversations in the radio business about visual radio or about social media and how we make radio more social or engage, the whole idea is engage our listeners, make them want to be with us more. Until we have a lot of conversations about that, it's going to take a while to hone in on ideas that work, ideas that don't work, and kind of suss those things out. One thing I heard yesterday that impressed the heck out of me was somebody, in fact, I guess it was Jenna Land from Charlotte, North Carolina. She asks her employees, how many times did you turn on the radio today? How many times did you turn on your radio today? And by turn on, I'm not sure. I don't think she meant actually physically turn it on. She may have meant turn it up, pay attention to it. How many times did you pay attention to your radio today? And the answer is typically 2, 3, 4, maybe. I'm thinking about my own life. I may reach for my radio literally a couple times a day. And then she asked, how many times today did you reach for this? And the average among adults was 50 plus times. I think it was 54 times. She said, we've got to figure out how to engage our listeners on this device and still do the best we can with the radio. But we got to realize that people have these in their hands. How do we get them engaged here? And I thought that was a really good question to ask. And help set the stage for why are we all here? Well, because there's this thing out there that everybody's going to that we're not on very much yet. So, of course, different people have different ideas about this. Some want to stream all the time. Others want to do more social media engagement. And I realize that Dan, for example, Dan McQuillan's from a different country where radio is a little bit different than it is here. But I've always believed a lot in Dan's approach to this, which is making radio very social and engaging people by picking clips out of radio that and making them putting them on social media, but also making the audio searchable. So, in other words, you got to do audio speech to text, and Well, there's whole subjects here we can jump onto about that. Because I saw some product ideas today that were just amazing. I'm not sure I can talk about all of them, but I guess I'll point this one thing out, and then we'll hear from Al and Chris. Is that if you do today, if you go do a Google search for something you heard on the radio, you won't find anything. You won't find likely a reference to that clip and be able to find that clip. Audio isn't very searchable. Google doesn't search audio, at least not to any extent that is helpful. So what we're looking at doing in the future is taking either whole shows, like whole podcasts, or at least clips, newscasts, interviews, clips, and not only posting that audio or even posting video with audio, but also posting a transcription of that, which can be done automatically. And there's technologies that are doing that pretty darn well now. And now there's technologies that start to allow you to identify who the speaker is during the audio program and tag that, so you know who's speaking, who said what. In other words, radio is kind of a self metadata. The metadata of a radio broadcast is all included, because at the beginning of a radio show, you say, hey, we're here talking with Al Reynolds. Well, that metadata now is in there. We know that it's Al Reynolds. I'm Kirk Harnack, and Chris Tobin is with us as well. So we know who the three characters are that are part of this radio document. Now, if we can put that into transcribed form, post that, have Google search it. Now, when you search for Al Reynolds, WAMU, and Axia, you're going to find references to the show that we are doing right now, if we can make that searchable. And then Google could lead you to click on a link that would either be a snippet or would be the whole program, or the transcription of the program. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was actually a conversation I had today as a follow-on to what are the benefits of doing the effort to do visual radio. And also the point was made that when people make posts on Facebook, how often do you see a post to an audio-only link? Now, you work at WAMU, maybe you see these more often, but most of the time, you rarely see posts that are audio-only. There's a picture or a video or maybe a document, maybe a magazine article, but there's at least a picture. And that's one of radio's problems. Radio doesn't relate well on Facebook, and radio doesn't relate well in Google searches. So we've got to fix that, and there are technologies emerging and systems and products available or becoming available that will do exactly that. Okay, so I had to get all that off my brain. Let me ask Al, because Al hadn't gotten to talk here much. Al, was any of that your takeaway, or did you have some other takeaway from all this? I'm going to let you hold the microphone.
All right. I thought it was an interesting, you know, symposium. It was nice to hear from people, you know, especially, this kind of stuff Charlotte was doing was pretty advanced.
Yeah.
You know, Jenna Land.
And she was doing a lot of metrics and bringing that to the sales table, mm-hmm. right? Okay.
Speaking to what you were just speaking on with the video and the metadata and transcription stuff, and that's all possible now. You know, it's stuff that we play around with, Microsoft has a product called Video Indexer. It's part of their cognitive services. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have iProfiler recordings that record 1A, our national show, and those get automatically posted to Video Indexer, which transcribes them, can do voice recognition. If we were feeding it video, you know, we video record the show, can do facial recognition, can do OCR of stuff that's in the background. Which is all really neat, and you get a transcript, and it's got an API, and it's searchable, and all this stuff can feed back to your websites. You know, our web team, our producers don't post audio clips to Facebook or Twitter or anything. You know, they've got these what are called audiograms, which just have got a little moving background in the back, you know, with the station logo and 1A and the caption file, so that you're not just posting audio, which doesn't share well, which doesn't get any traction. But, you know, captioned audio performs amazingly well for us. And I think the biggest thing was Mike Fox from MS Communications in New York nailed on, you know, content is king. You know, you hear a lot of people talk about radio's magic. It's got this special magic to it. And I don't know, I'm millennial. I don't buy that. Radio is just a medium. That isn't the magical part of it. It's the content. It's what people are talking about. It's the stories they're telling. It's what they're saying, how they interact with people, how they connect with people. And that can happen over any medium. It's not restricted to radio. Radio is nice because it's cheap and it's free and it gets everywhere, and that's convenient. But there's no reason you can't make those same connections on a smartphone or on a video screen or a live stream, whatever. And everything beyond the content is just, it's ancillary. It's a bonus. You know, it makes things easier. You know, makes it easier to connect with people. But if it's not there, it's not the end of the world. Like, you know, you can listen to Jimi Hendrix off a crappy cassette tape, and it can sound terrible, but it's still Hendrix, and you still know it's magic.
Ah, yeah.
You know, if you get it on a perfect vinyl with the great sound system and everything, sure, it's a little bit better, but doesn't change the fact that you knew it was magic the first time you heard it. And I think that's what he recognized. That's important.
Mike Fox did.
Yes, yeah. Mike Fox. Yeah. Cool. Who has a great name.
Yeah, and he spells it M-I-C.
He does.
That's great. Mike Fox. So, Chris, in relation to being searchable and shareable, or whatever your takeaways were in that area, talk to us about that, your thoughts. You're muted, too.
There we go. So I have yes, I'm muted. I had to say a few things before I got ready. No, I'm okay. I have a couple of friends who are SEO mavens and learned a lot of things about search engine optimization and what to expect. And the industry we're in, radio, definitely needs to learn a little more about how to reach out in that fashion. And yesterday's symposium brought that to my attention even more and brought to light the fact that we have a lot of people running around in the pen, but again, I don't hear the visionaries. I don't see the visionaries pointing these folks in the right direction, just as Al pointed out what they're doing in AMU, and you can do all these things, and the web team has this and that. You know, commercial stations have a lot of people on staff. Mike Fox mentioned his staff, and it's like, okay, but who do they go to get the guidance to make sure that they're grabbing the right stuff, or maybe formatting that Facebook element or the YouTube element or anything that leaves the print? Is it following a certain I'll say protocol, but that's probably not the right word. Say, for instance, if you know you work for a company, you have a book, a manual on how external communications are handled, how branding, logos, colors of the logos, which colors you use, the Pantone numbers, the whole bit. Every time this logo appears, here's how it needs to be presented, regardless of what you think. That's what radio is missing in form of what, you know, what Dan calls shareable radio, what everybody else is calling visual radio. We don't have any group of people within our organizations, I shouldn't say out, within organizations, pointing in that direction and say, hey, I saw the posting. It was great. However, where was the station logo? I have watched so many snippets of things go up on websites and on Facebook from radio stations across the country, and almost 9 out of 10 times, I see nothing about the station, no branding or anything, except maybe a small little mic flag somewhere that really, when you're looking at the image, you know, your eyes aren't going there. You know, it's like, these are the little subtleties or details that I think we need to relearn. We used to do it before with print. You know, if you did a television campaign with Film House, you made sure your logo appeared a certain way. It was always the one that you were campaigning with. It was in print the same way. For some reason, we do this visual thing, the video, and all that went out the window. So yesterday's symposium and the panelists, I think, brought attention to a lot of things. And as Al pointed out, and as you've, Kirk, pointed out, I think we need to just step back and go, okay, let's rethink how do we do this in the past? You know, how does television do it? How do they do it? And then fine tune it for distribution through all the different channels. And the magic is not the radio itself. The magic is how you get the story out to the individuals. You know, Walt Disney's magic was not the fact that he did animation with multi-layer gels, but it was the story they told. And it just so happened the gels made it even more convincing. Radio is in the same boat. Radio has the ability to reach already. That's done. Now the trick is when that content reaches the individual, is it compelling enough for them to say, wow, that's pretty cool, and stay with you? And, you know, if they stay with you, you can guide them through, you know, conversation or promotion to these devices. They're not going to find you like this without some guidance. So that's why Dan McQuillan mentioned later on in the symposium, it's important for radio to look at your foundation, say, don't give up on radio per se. Don't say, it's not this, that. Just make it strong, stick with it, and then augment it with all these other things. And that's how I've always pretty much looked at it. I think it makes the best sense.
You know, it seems that one thing that I've noticed about the radio business, as opposed to television, and I think actually Dan referred to this yesterday, was that when a guest, maybe even particularly a politician, comes onto a television set, they're they're all ready. Their tie is straight. They know that they're in a television situation. They have their answers, their pat answers, their television correct answers memorized and ready to go. And they sit down for the interview, and that's what you get. You get almost a prepared statement from a lot of folks. And it doesn't always happen that way, but so often the intimidation of television, of full production, does this to you. Whereas a lot of artists, and as we found out from some situations, for example, in England, and I'm sure plenty around the U.S. and other countries too, that people let their guard down a bit more for radio. They get comfortable. And and that's why there's so many radio interviews that are rather intimate in their nature. Artists and stars and actors and actresses and comedians and politicians will be a little more forthcoming oftentimes. In fact, that was one of the successes, I think, of the Diane Rehm show, is that she would get people to open up and talk about their lives, their interests, their careers, and where they were going, more so than people often do in a television environment. So that's one of radio's strong points, is we can get people to talk in ways that they wouldn't perhaps otherwise. So what's all that? That's a preamble to say radio has something that other media may not. And there's a lot of talent in radio. There's the expectation that we're going to have this good conversation. It's a lot of curated material, audio material, but curated. So the whole notion of visual radio is simply to bring what radio does well into the realm of what social media and mass distribution by IP networks on smartphones, bring that in so that it's friendly to those environments. And apparently, a large part of that is just something visual. It can be a still picture. You mentioned that the audio things that you post, that WAMU posts, do have a moving a motion graphic, mm-hmm. even if they're just audio, even if they're not actual video. Mm-hmm. Right? They got a motion graphic, something that makes it much more shareable. So that's what I think part of the emphasis was yesterday in the symposium was that make it a little bit visual so that it's shareable. Have you noticed on YouTube, a lot of times I'll look up a song on YouTube and I'll find the song. In fact, there's a song that I like by Lee Dorsey. I think it's from the late 50s. And the song is called "Everything I Do's Gonna Be Funky." I love this song. It's a great song. And a little hard to find, but it's on YouTube. And if you find that on YouTube, there's a video there. And the video is just that record album that Lee Dorsey's, that the song came from. In front of that is a turntable. And I don't even know if it's actually playing that song, but the turntable's going around and around. That's the video. That's how it gets on. That's how it on YouTube. That makes it a video. Mm-hmm. And there's other ways to make videos on YouTube that are just music, and then you hear the song. And so I think people have an expectation of seeing something along with what they're hearing. And obviously people who post on YouTube, even if it's just audio, they too have an expectation of seeing something. And certainly with social media, you're scrolling through your Facebook feed and you're more likely to stop on something that's moving. I sure am. And take a quick listen to it. So anyway, that's part of making the great content that we do in radio more shareable in these other places that are not radio. And I think that's a big part of the emphasis. Now, after the break, we're gonna do a couple things after the break. We'll talk a little bit about the possibility of monetizing this, what Jenna Land and I believe Angela and what Mike Fox were talking about. We'll review that a little bit and see how the engineers, how we can make sure that we're not an impediment, that we're helping the broadcaster to make money from what they're putting out there, either directly or indirectly. And we're also going to talk to Al about WAMU, because I got the tour of this place. It's pretty cool, and I want to hear more about audio over IP and the new studios. These studios are only since October, right? I'm sorry, no, you're here since October.
I'm here since March.
March.
The studios were built in 2013.
2013. What was it from October? What am I getting confused with?
The new automation system.
That's right. The wide orbit. Okay, so they switched to automations just a couple months ago. So that's coming up. All right. Our show, This Week in Radio Tech, is brought to you by our good friends at the Telos Alliance. Well, they're my employer, so yes, they are very much my friends. And the Telos Alliance is very much involved with virtual radio as well. In fact, we have a landing page for it. If you go to, we'll put this in the show notes, but it's success.telos.com. TELUSALLIANCE.com/virtual-radio. I know that's too much to take in verbally. So click the link on it in the show notes. And there's a lot of different ideas about what virtual radio, and by the way, this is hand in hand, but different from visual radio, because our show's about visual radio. And the website here is about virtual radio. Yeah, it is a new frontier, this idea of virtual radio. And what does it mean? Well, we have several videos on here, interviews with different people, different consultants, contract engineers, manufacturers, software designers, about what is virtual radio. And, you know, it's at the moment, I think it's kind of a smorgasbord. You choose what sounds good for you, what will help your broadcast operations in virtualizing. Maybe it's just remoting your audio console onto an iPad. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's, for whatever reason, getting rid of your audio console and doing it, doing that mixing completely on a touchscreen, whether it's an iPad or a big multi-touch touchscreen. Maybe it's being able to take control of your station in a meaningful way from a smartphone, not in your station. You know, if you got a problem, you need to fix. Maybe it's having a remote talent at home, being able to run everything from that home situation. So you've got a great morning crew that comes in, but your afternoon guy, for whatever reason, you know, doesn't want to, can't make it in, live somewhere else. Can that person run the afternoon show, and how? Then there's the whole idea of consolidating your equipment into smaller rack spaces, or maybe even in the cloud. So we've got some interviews about that as well. And then there's the idea of virtualizing things like audio processing. And what does that look like? Virtualizing things like your call-in show. So this whole notion of virtual radio, again, it means different things to different people. And at the Telos Alliance, we're trying to bring you these different views of it. Some of these views, the Telos Alliance is already making solutions for. So, for example, the Vylor project for the BBC in England, this is where they, in a way, virtualized their studios by putting almost all of the mixing, the codecs, the phone hybrids, the automation system, putting all of that into a couple of data centers. So you've got a main and a backup data center. And then that means that the studios out, you know, in the countryside, in the hamlets and villages and other big cities, the BBC has full consoles. The talent doesn't know it's any different, and yet they are actually mixing things that are going on in a different city. And so that very idea and implementing that literally saved the BBC some millions of dollars in refitting all these studios. And that was just a first step. There's even better ways and more sophisticated ways to virtualize what we do in broadcasting. And there's just huge benefits. Again, there's some interviews on here. There's an interview that engineers, fellow engineers, if you go to that webpage, success.telusalliance.com/virtual-radio, there's a near the bottom of the page, there is an interview. It's called Virtual Radio Real Benefits. And there I speak with Sasha Ludwig and Joel Brunenberg, about what are the real benefits from the IT perspective of virtualizing. And they have some keen insights into this and how it really has benefits. And it's way different. That what they say is like foreign to traditional broadcast engineers. So anyway, I encourage you to check it out. The link is in the show notes. Go to the Telos Alliance, find the virtual radio page, and check it out. Thanks a lot, Telos Alliance, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. Oh, and I should mention, we've got a product right now. It's the IP Tablet. You need to check out IP Tablet, because there's a whole lot of cool stuff you can do with IP Tablet. You design your own work interface there, anything from your automation system to your phone system to your mixing console on either a tablet, a smartphone, or on a big honking 35-inch touchscreen, and it's just amazing stuff. All right. Thanks a lot, Telos. So we're talking with Al Reynolds from WAMU, and Chris Tobin is here as well. So let's kind of, Chris, if we can kind of, in the next 10 minutes, wrap up the visual radio thing. I'm wondering about, a lot of stations are trying monetizing their digital stuff. And I remember you saying, you know, they need a bit more leadership in this, not do it so haphazardly. But at this point, what can engineers do to make sure they're not a hindrance, but a help to a station's effort in monetizing their digital stuff? What's your impression about what an engineer can do to help?
Well, it's not an impression. It's actually things I've done and I know work. What you should do is, first of all, learn what the other side does. So somehow gauge the temperature of the managers, talk to your immediate supervisor or department head, whatever, in your organization and say, hey, I'd like to sit in on a marketing meeting. I'd like to sit in on a sales meeting. Now, you're sitting in as a monitor only. Tell them you're just looking to be like a read-only file. I'm just coming in, sit in the corner. I just want to observe, understand, learn a few things, see what's going on. And then after you've had that meeting, take notes. Write down some of the buzzwords, if you will, or the terminology that's being used. And then go back and do some research and understand what does it mean with QM, AQH, TSL. Why is it important if my QM is high but my TSL is low? What does that mean? It means the station is being sampled. They like what they hear, but they're not staying long enough. That's a problem. That's listener retention. These are things you need to understand because listener retention is important if you're doing a broadcast. Say a program director comes to you in the engineering department. Now, they say, look, we want to do a broadcast. We got the chance with a record label that says that Justin Bieber will be at an event. It's a charity event. We want to be part of it because we're working with the label on other stuff, and this would be a great opportunity for us to do things. What can we do? How do we do it? First response typically today in today's engineers will be, well, you need ISDN. That's a 14 business day turnaround if we're lucky, and no guarantees that it'll work. Right there, the conversation died. The program director or whomever just is like, why did I bother? Why am I even talking to you? They leave. You don't want that. What you need to know is the impact that this will have. And say, hey, okay, what do you want? When is it first? Well, it's in a month. Great. Got some time. Go to the venue they want to do it from. Look at the venue and say, okay, what do we have access to? IP, broadband, we have access to this and that. Okay, now let's go back to our toolbox. What do we have in the toolbox? Maybe we can, maybe we can't. Now, maybe you're a radio station and you happen to be co-located with a TV station. Maybe you have a TV group. Maybe your radio station is in the building on the east side of town and the TV station that's part of the company is on, say, the north side. You might want to talk to them and say, hey, do you guys got any microwave gear that we could borrow for this event we're doing and get into their system and backhaul the audio? And then you say, wait a minute, if I take a microwave, I can video. Now I could bring video back for the website. Now you take that information that you've confirmed with the engineering guys, go back to programming and say, well, what if I could do this, this, and this? Would this help add value? Now your program director looks at you as an ally. Now the sales department finds out that you're going to bring video back for the website. That's digital dollars. Wait a minute. Now we have the radio and we have digital dollars that we can maybe do something with. That's what you need to do. I mean, I'm putting it in what seems like very simple. It's easy to say. I can tell you from personal experience, I've done that. And I've done it with the TV guys too. It works. But you do need to gain the respect. And the only way, and a salesperson, nature of the beast, they're always looking for the next best deal. Okay, that's the part of the business. Do not take it personally. Just accept the fact that's what salespeople do. That's what they're good at, and there's a good thing for it. But you do need to at least talk their language a little bit so they can look at you and go, okay, he made an effort. He or she made an effort to learn what I do. I'll take the time to understand what they're trying to get at. Once you cross that bridge, once you bridge the gap, you're in. I'm telling you. I know many people that to this day I still get phone calls from folks I used to work with that are not engineers, program directors, and some of them sales managers, and call me up and, hey, remember that thing we did, blah, blah, blah. I was like, yeah, is that still doable? I'm like, sure, just tell so-and-so in the office that you want to do this, this, and this. Well, they don't remember anything. I said, no, 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 just tell them to do this. Then a month later, I get a call. Thanks a lot, it worked. We just closed the deal and, blah, blah, blah. So that's, the best way to put it. Learn what the other guys are doing. Just as Jenna was talking about, and Mike Fox, who works with people I know over at Emmis, he's got some great people he works with, and they'll come up with any way possible to make something happen because they get it. They know the other side. They can talk the language. So that's what you got to do. You got to speak the language. And I've worked with guys that literally plaid shirt, pocket protector, that's their suit. And when I talk to them about anything other than the electrons, photons going through a wire or a fiber, They just like, what do I need to know that? What's the point of that? I'm like, well, that's your paycheck, pal. Believe it or not, that's your paycheck. So that's what you need to do. You need to learn the other side. Sit in meetings. Right, Kirk? I mean, I'm sure you guys at Telos have a lot of folks that come in and just sit and watch and learn, figure out what the other half is doing. At least I think you do.
We do that, yeah. And we're lucky, and not to talk about Telos, but we've got a lot of broadcasters and former broadcasters who work at Telos. We've got people who currently engineer for radio stations who work at the Telos Alliance. And we got me. I mean, I'm part owner of 10 stations. I own the part that doesn't make any money, which is why I work at Telos. And we're small stations, yet we're trying to do digital outreach. And I've got a bunch of great ideas now to bring back to our stations. Try them out, see what works, see what we can monetize. And I want to point out that I hope not everything is about direct monetization. Maybe it can be. Hey, maybe when I go back to my stations in Mississippi, we're going to sell the studio. You know, hey, it's the Beeman Automotive Q102 studio. And you know, we mention that every now and then and pay for the studio upgrades. But not everything you do has to be a sponsored. I mean, you can do things that simply either help listeners, help a charity, and you know, make you look good in the community, or things that just drive people to listen to tomorrow's morning show.
Yeah.
Or stay with you all day.
Mm-hmm. All day. Well, it's funny you say that, hope that people don't directly try to monetize. You have to keep in mind that sometimes, and people who do marketing for a living, and I have a friend of mine who does it very well, and she does everything she touches with marketing just makes money. So it's a great, great knowledge base. You have to remember, it's not always the direct piece. Remember, this product line I'm holding in my hand, the little smartphone device that just came out with the number 10, has an ecosystem around it. And that ecosystem, 90% of it has nothing to do with the manufacturer of the phone. They're all the people have learned, hey, wait a minute. And that's the indirect monetization of what this one product does. Your radio station is in a similar vein. I'll give you an example. I worked for a radio station many years ago where the program director, the guy's a genius when he came up with this stuff. I thought it was great. The people I worked with thought he was totally bonkers. So first year he's with the radio station, mind you, this radio station has no ratings. It's you know bottom in the market. Matter of fact, I think people used to laugh at it when they went to try to do ad buys. And he came up with this idea for the holidays. He said, I want to do a 1 week long broadcast from this inside a storefront window. And we're all sitting there in the room like, what? Yes, well, I want to do a broadcast for our morning show, middays, afternoon drive will be from the inside a storefront window. Can we find the store that'll do it? General manager, who God bless him, he works, I think, with the folks at Sagas now. But he was one of those kind of guys that just looked at things, never said no immediately. He always would just sit back quietly, and he would say, "If you could do that, what is your vision? What do you see coming of this? What else will happen?" And then this program director would just explain by going, well, if we do this, 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 and this, here's what I expect sales will start to hear and get feedback from. So here's what we did. This general manager goes, tell you what, go look for a store. Go, you have at it. Find somebody who's willing to go with what you think makes sense. And then when you find them, call me. I'll come down. We'll meet. We'll sit down, have a big to-do powwow with the GM of the radio station, the program director, and this big idea. PD says, great, I'm doing it. So he goes to this store, street level window. You could drive up to it. I went with him. He goes, you got to come with me. You're doing a site survey. I'm like, I have no idea what you're looking to do. Don't worry about it. Went with him. We looked at this store. I was like, wow, this is a pretty cool window. Street, there's a sidewalk. There's a drive up. You can drive up in your car. And he goes, this is it. This is the place. And here's what my vision is. Inside the window, we're going to have a little radio console. The cart machines will be played right from here. I'm like, we're going to what? Okay, we're going to play the music from here? He goes, yeah, all right. Yes, this was a long time ago. We were using music on cart machines. but my story is about the content and the story that we created and the image that had nothing to do with the technology. So I said, what's the next part of your little vision? Well, it's going to be a Toys for Tots program. We're going to have people donating toys for tots. Everyone's familiar with that, right? Big box is going to be in front of the window. I said, so what about inside the window? No, 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 no. There'll be a velvet rope. Nobody is allowed to talk to the DJs inside the window. They have to talk to them through the window. Can you put a microphone out front here? Like, you want to put a microphone in front of the store, through the revolving doors, out in front? We'll figure something out. I said, why? He goes, that is the magic microphone. What? The magic microphone next to the Marine who's going to be standing next to the box. I'm like, a Marine? Well, yeah, we're going to have a full-fledged active Marine standing next to the box collecting the toys. And if you don't talk to people, they'll talk it talk through the microphone. I'm like, all right, this is pretty wild. Now you're picturing this in your head. Storefront window, very large. Inside, we have all the settings of a studio, the whole bit. Guy standing out front. He goes back to the GM. They make the deal. First week we do it, 10,000 toys show up. Sales department gets phone calls from everybody in the community wanting to know more about how they can contribute. Advertise. We had local merchants in the strip mall who never bought radio in their existence buying schedules because they saw the impact. Now, there's no digital component because we didn't have the internet, so to speak, back then, you know, and anything we have now. But what we did do is we videotaped everything we did, and we made small little edited video pieces that would go out, and they would show them on VHS, yes, and they'd take them places and say, here's what we've been doing. Here's the sales kit. And they'd bring people into the radio station to show them. That is the type of thinking, type of vision that you need today. Could you imagine if we did that today with what you have at your disposal? 10,000 would be the first hour, you know?
So now I get what you mean, Chris. And for a while, I was having trouble understanding for sure, locking in on what you meant by you need a visionary. You need somebody to direct the station's vision for their use of visual media. Or social media. Now I get it. You had that person at that station before social media existed.
That's correct. And that story, that we did that program, that broadcast for four years. Oh, did I mention that after we did that first week, the other anchor store in the strip mall already signed up for the following holiday season? Oh, yeah, that was Sears and Roebuck. And then the following season, and then before the following season even started, I think it was January, we got a call from the local shopping mall, the big mall, the one that you walk around, not a strip mall, that had several anchor stores in it, one of them being R.H. Macy's and Saks and a few others, called up and said, how do we get the magic microphone in front of our store? And I sat there in this conference call with the PD, GM and sales manager, and I lean over to the program director and said, did you just call it the magic microphone? And this grin on the PD's face was like, that's what I've been trying to tell everybody. They don't care about the radio station. They care about what we're doing. The fact that they remember the magic microphone was the focal point because you weren't allowed to talk to the jock through the window by coming through the glass on the side. And the sales manager asked the PD, why can't they do that? He goes, well, when you talk back to the radio, do you walk inside of it? No, you don't. You talk back to the radio. Here, you actually get a response. Think about what I just said, what he was thinking about. This is 1987.
Wow.
He was talking about the magic of the black box on the table.
Yeah, yeah.
And we created a live, interactive, engaging. So that following season, we did 3 weeks of storefront windows. 3 weeks. We were the largest collection of Toys for Tots in the state of Connecticut for the first time ever. I think so. That's what you need. That's what I mean by visionary.
In response to my initial question about what can the engineer do, it seems like the way that you made that happen, the way that you participated in that, was to not say no, to listen and figure out, yes, I'll make sure you understand what they want to do. Maybe you got to get some clarification, but your solution, your part in that was to not say no, but to say, we'll figure out how to do that.
Right. And to my point of understanding how to talk the other side's language, like the program director, the sales department, when I went, when he came to me and said to me, I want to do this event this way, can we do it? And I said, I will not say no, but what I will say is if I can find a way to do it, do you have the budget to make it happen? And he looked at me and goes, well, I said, you tell me there'll be a budget. After I come up with a solution, we'll make it happen. He goes, find a solution and I'll worry about the budget. That's what he did. And for a mere $3,000, we got ourselves 3 weeks in the storefront window with all kinds of stuff to the point where we had to beat people away. It was the local police department showed up and say, look, you got to get crowd control, guys. You're on a sidewalk. And I mean, We did things then that if I wish people would do today, programmers would just stop being so creativity aversion, and just do it. You'd be surprised. And yesterday's symposium, the panelists, it was like, guys, you got all the elements. You're missing the point. You've got everything. You just don't have the visionary at the top to say, you know what? You guys in digital media, You have 37 videographers we've got. Here's what I see happening. Here's what I want you to do. When you shoot that video, do it this way. Just don't give me a shot of that. I want this. I want that one piece, that 10 seconds, 5 seconds to tell a story. Boom, done. And we'll make it something else. We'll make it bigger, you know, larger. Who knows? I'm working with people for the last 2 years now on similar projects on my spare time on the weekends, and it works. I actually had a friend of mine at a sporting, he does a sports show, and he said, we're going to do a live event from a sports bar. How do we do that? I said, don't worry about that part. Here's what you need to know. And we did stuff, and it worked. I actually took ideas from what I did back in 87, applied it, you know, last year to the sports bar event. It worked. It worked so well, which I'm very happy for, because again, it's that vision. They called us back for 3 more broadcasts. Small sports bar located in Philadelphia.
Yeah, yeah. I also hear you saying, not stated directly, but you, as well as I, as well as many people, have been in the business for a while. We kind of miss the crazy folks in the business who did promotions like this, like the guy who put all those record albums on the baseball field and burned them all up in a bonfire, and told you're never coming back here again, buddy. He did a big event back in Cleveland, Ohio. Forget the guy's name. Yeah. But I kind of miss the crazies in this business who did stuff like that. Maybe maybe we can see them return. That would be cool.
Well, that's why I'm saying the engineering element, we need to, as engineers, as techies, whatever you want to call it, we're definitely, wired differently. Okay. No pun intended. There's just, we're wired differently for a reason. You know, I'm a left-handed person. People tell me you're left-handed. That's why you think this way. Or that's why you do things. I'm like, all right, whatever. Okay. I guess there's some scientific proof. Who knows? But I know people who are right-handed do certain things a certain way. So what? But the thing is, the engineering side, I trust me, I've worked with program directors at a very large broadcast group where they never set foot in the engineering office because they knew exactly what they're going to get. The big fat no before they even asked the question. So they gave up. Think of that. If you're giving up on that, how much are you missing because you don't think there's a way to do it? And those panelists yesterday, the first group of panelists, I got a pretty good feeling that that's what they're running up against. They got people in their office that go, yeah, I can't be done. You can't do that. So they go to somebody else who says, well, I could do it with my iPhone. Well, that's great. That's just what we don't need. But they got no choice. So I say to to my contemporaries, hey, learn the other side of the business. It's important. It's very important. Be able to talk to a sales manager about average quarter hour or QM or CPMs or PPM and the results of PPM and how it works and why things are up and down, hot zips, the whole bit. Once they see you get it and you're making the time and effort, they will open up and offer you stuff. And you may even find out, oh, you do have a budget for that? Well, if we rent this device for, $500 for the week, we could actually do that broadcast you want to do and stream it. Oh, see, all of a sudden. You laugh, but it's true, and I've been doing this.
No, I'm laughing with you. That's how I understand. Yeah. Hey, Chris, we got to spend just a minute talking to Al Reynolds here about WAMU. Sorry, because have you ever been here to WAMU? You've been here?
Yeah, I've been there years ago, yes. And I actually worked with a gentleman who I used to program there at one time, yeah.
Well, they moved here in 2013, right?
Yep, 2013. That's correct.
And so, Al, kind of give me the elevator speech about WAMU and about the technology here. What are you guys? What is turning you on here? What are you dealing with technology wise?
So we're pretty well set. We've got a lot of fancy toys, which is really nice. I like fancy toys. We've got a full blown audio over IP system, actually, and all the studios, the elements in the main on air studios and the IQs. And the rest of the production studios, they work well. We've got a lot of heavy duty, high end IT equipment, which is fun to play with. I was showing Kirk our UCS, Cisco UCS, Unified Computing System, which hosts all of our infrastructure. We're about to blow up in 2 weeks and make the switch from VMware to Hyper-V.
Wait, you sound kind of confident about this blow up thing and move along.
Yeah, why wouldn't I be? It's going to be totally fine. There won't be any problems.
Okay.
My boss is here. He's in the room. There's not going to be any problems at all. Let's make that very clear.
By the way, also on IP is your phone system.
Yep. We're using the Telos VX system. I had Axia and Telos in Atlanta at my last station at WSTR.
Okay.
So I'm familiar with it. It works. Yeah. And that's good. I like things that work that I don't have to worry about.
What I notice is that because you're audio over IP and you're a young engineer, you've grown up knowing this, mm-hmm. that the incredible flexibility you get by by having an IP infrastructure, you can say yes to a lot of things. My station's in Mississippi. When my radio partner asked me, hey, can we do this? Can we do that? The answer is usually, yeah, we can. Let me jump on that. And sometimes, honestly, sometimes it's a 5-minute solution. Now, sometimes we've got to buy something, but it rarely involves, yeah, but I'll have to build up a big honking cable and connectors and run this down the hallway. And it's rarely that.
Yeah, no, as an engineer, it's your job. Like, you're not here to be an engineer. You're here to serve the station and, you know, do whatever it takes to make the station successful. At the end of the day, we're just here to be a successful station. Yeah. And, you know, whatever we got to do, we'll do it. The IP audio stuff, I guess, makes things easier. I've never worked with anything that wasn't.
Oh, well, you don't know what it was like back in the old days.
You talk about cart machines. I've never seen a cart machine.
These young whippersnappers, what are we going to do with these fellas?
Yeah. You know, my life has just been Windows updates is all I got to worry
about. Oh, that's pretty bad right there.
So, no, okay. It's a piece of cake.
I feel your pain.
It's a piece of cake. You just got to know it. So, you know, it makes it easy. You know, we just, you know, now it's more of a matter of trying to define workflows, make sure that, you know, we're using this equipment in the best way possible for everybody.
I did notice, like, in your news department, everybody has a couple of screens. Mm-hmm. What are your news people doing to file their stories, to make their stories?
So they use Audition for their audio editing for the most part. And then, you know, we've just got a pretty simple process. They drop their, you know, once they go through an editor, they drop their files in a folder that gets ingested into Wide Orbit. They'll get a little Slack message back saying, you know, hey, your stuff successfully made it in. You know, producers have been notified. The web team's been notified that they need to throw this on, create a web post or whatever. So, yeah, we just try and keep things simple.
So can they record their story and their phone calls at their desk?
Not at the moment. I have grand ambitions one day of, you know, having kind of a private and a public audio over IP network. You know, the private stuff is the critical, you know, for your studios, your on-air stuff. But there's no reason you couldn't have a public AOIP network that extends to all your newsroom laptops and has, you know, an IP audio driver. And you take it in. You've got hybrids on your VX that are shared, you know, a little vMix panel or a web panel, whatever you want to build. Mm-hmm. There's no reason that can't exist at your desk with a single Ethernet cable and maybe a headphone amp and a mic. And instead of, you know, building out a whole, you know, what was it, the Harris, the radio mixer, you know, rack radio mixer stuff.
You know, I was in England a few weeks ago, and I saw a couple of stations that part of this was keeping their network separate, but they put nodes, AXIX nodes, they had one X node served four reporters.
Yep, just put it at the end of the
audio in and out, and that stayed on its own network. And then the reporters had access to, I think, a piece of custom software, which maybe talked to Pathfinder. Mm-hmm. And so there was never any direct connection between the reporter's computer and the on-air network,
right. Yep.
But they could control what they needed to and bring feeds in and mm-hmm. put feeds out, and that way they had access to easily file stories and mm-hmm. do their editing at the same place. So that can be a solution too, where their own computer doesn't have to be on the same network. Just costs a bit more money with the nodes.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah.
Al, I'm sorry we didn't get to talk more, but thanks for your contributions, both to Visual Radio and your thoughts about that and what WAMU is doing.
Sure.
And the letting us know that, hey, this AOIP stuff is working.
Does the job.
Chris and audience, don't go away. We've got a special treat for you right after the break. And Chris, I guess you overheard what the special treat is, but we've got a special treat.
I'm not saying anything. That's all right.
Okay. Well, you hang on. Al, thanks again, man. I really appreciate you being here.
I'll let your special treat get in here.
Okay. Hey, our show, before the treat gets in here, we're going to switch over to look at our last sponsor here. And that is the folks at Lavo. And if you go to Lavo, do me a favor and go to it by typing into your browser. Go to Lavo, Lavo.com/twert. That way they'll know that you came here because of our show, and it'll take you right to their radio page. And from the radio page, you can click on this console. This is the Ruby console from Lavo. And this console is amazing for a couple of reasons. Well, for a bunch of reasons. One of them is it uses their proven one rack unit DSP engine. And that's where your audio ins and outs are. That's where your dual power supplies are. That's where your mic and line level inputs and outputs, AES in and out, and your Ravenna AES67 network connection is right there on the one rack unit DSP. Now, that's proven tech, works great. Now, look at the console. It's beautiful. It's got great button feel, faders. Everything just feels good. It's accepted around the world, this design. And then what they've also done is, well, look, the console itself is easy to operate, easy to program. But if you want to go under the hood, if you're an advanced operator or if you're the engineer, you go in through either remotely or through the screen interface, and you can set up a lot of amazing things like the auto mix. That's so fantastic. You can have 5, 6, 10 people in a room all talking. Auto mix takes care of it and it puts the good comments on the air. It's just amazing what it does. And you can give priority to the host. So if the host needs to say something, yeah, you can beat down everybody else in the room. So the auto mix works great. Another thing that's really cool is the auto level set. So let's say you've got some guests coming in and out. Like I've got a guest about to appear on the show. I have no idea how loud this guy's going to talk. Well, the level set, the auto leveling, lets you set that at the preamp. So you're not going to overdrive or underutilize the preamp on the Lavo console. The level is going to, bam, it's going to adjust and be just right for that guest, whether it's somebody that talks in the microphone like this and hogs the mic, or somebody who's a little bit shy and they're way off the mic. The Lavo console will take care of that. So I've got to recommend this. You go to the website, Lavo, LAWO.com/twert. That'll take you to the radio page. Scroll down and click on the Ruby console. It's new, it's amazing, and you're going to like it. Thanks a lot to Lavo for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. Here's the treat right here.
It's this guy. Don't oversell it, Kurt. Don't oversell it.
Rob Bertrand. Hey, buddy. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. I don't know I'm sure everyone's disappointed that I'm the special treat. I would have wanted something way better than that.
I think Al lowered your chair.
I think he did, too. I'm like, you know, I know I'm taller than you, Kurt.
You are.
I'm a little miniature, so thanks for that, Al.
You're welcome.
I was just joking with Al. I was pulling the Ron Burgundy thing. And I said, no, I've got to be the tallest guy on the set, Al.
So, worked with a few people.
So, hey, it's good to see you here. Last time I saw you was in New York.
Yeah. So I've been here in Washington since last spring. You know, Chris and I are our old colleagues. So it's fun to appear on the show with Chris. Mm-hmm. And it's cool. Great to see you. Great to catch up at the show yesterday.
Yeah, that's right. I saw you. And you and Al and another couple of your colleagues were there as well.
Yeah, you know, rolling deep here from WAMU to the Visual Radio Symposium and really enjoying it.
So what was your quick takeaway from that? Do you have some plans to implement anything that you heard about? You got some ideas rolling around now?
You know, I was just talking with my boss about this a little earlier. I'm honestly a little jealous of some of the things that we saw, you know, most significantly to my former neighbors over at Emmis. Really pretty amazing what you're able to build when you have such outstanding local content. It's really still about local content, and that's what we're really focused on building here at WAMU. We're in a time of transformation, and we have, at our fingertips, the ability to generate so much. But we're still early in that reinvention. And so we don't want to put the technology ahead of the content. Mm-hmm. And figuring that part of it out is a big thing. We have some big plans to build a big video studio here. We have one that exists today. We have several that exist today in various forms. We'd like to do one properly and came away with some thoughts on that yesterday for sure.
Cool. Now it's time for the tip of the week. I wish we had more time because we could do an hour together, and maybe sometime you'll be on the show for the whole show. So it's time for the tip of the week, and you want Chris to go first, or you want to go first?
Chris, why don't you go first?
Okay, Chris Tobin, tip of the
week.
Sure,
why not? Hey, look, Rob, you're in a great situation. AMU is what, like a 9 share in the market? You're like number 2 to TOP or number 1? I'm sorry. You're on top of TOP.
Depends
now.
On the week. Sometimes we're number 1, sometimes we're number 2. It's always an adventure.
Yeah, but hey, you know what it feels like to be in the number 1 and 2 spot in the market? That's good. So you guys are in a great position to get some local stuff. That's fun. You're right. You're at a great time. That is unbelievable. I've been reading about what's been going on in Washington. It's good stuff. So tip of the week, we're all familiar with these wonderful little Sony bags, right? If you have an MDR like the folks are wearing, Sometimes you have extra ones laying around the shelf. You don't know what to do with it. Well, I repurpose these little suckers. They're handy. So right here, I have my little power to go. So yes, you've probably seen one of these. Maybe you were lucky to get one at a Telos event. Little power puck.
That's what I think. Yeah, brings back memories.
Yeah. So I have one of these I travel with, and then I make sure I bring with me the little plug-in, so you can plug it in. And this has two ports, a 1.2 amp, a 2.1 amp port. And then I have my bag of adapter cables for the various iProducts and Android stuff, all in one little bag, and it travels with this. Simple tip. I can't tell you how many times I've traveled places and people go, excuse me, do you have a iPhone lightning adapter charger I can borrow?
Absolutely.
And I'm like, matter of fact, I think I do.
Now, have you ever talked about just the Ziploc bags as your tip of the week?
The Ziploc bag. I think I did that once a while back. I did.
Because you and I had both separately adopted the Ziploc bags as a staple of news production. And I was impressed by that when we worked together, that we would both come with our Ziploc bags filled with various accoutrements.
Yes. What Rob is pointing to is I used to build these little kits of everything had a little place. My idea of travel bags for news, and I've worked in newsrooms all my life, was the one thing I hated was reporters getting to a location and dumping out a bag and trying to figure out how to plug something in and then getting the phone call that they couldn't get something because of X. So I said, that's it. From now on, bag of what you need. Here's this bag. Has this stuff, done. That's all you need. Or it's like an adapter cable that has multiple ends, and that's all you need. 10-foot XLR. Here's a mic attenuator for a press box. You're done. And Rob's right. We came up with some stuff, and those two facilities benefited greatly from, common sense thinking, I think, is really what it was. We both were in the trenches, both had to come up with a solution. As I mentioned earlier in the show, we made it a point to learn what the news department does, what a reporter needs. We didn't speak or write stories, but we knew what they needed to get to them, and we came back with a solution, and it worked. And Rob could tell you many good stories with certain reporters that, they're not technically inclined, which I wouldn't expect. So you got to come up with stuff that makes total sense. Yeah, Rob is laughing. I'm sure he's smirking because I know exactly what he was thinking of. But the thing is, their job is editorial.
There's so many choices, Chris.
It's so true. But they're good people. They're very good people, and they're award-winning journalists. And the thing was, mm-hmm. we were able to get them solutions that they were confident. If they came to Rob or I or a couple others in the department and said, hey, I got to cover this event. Here's where it's going to be. Do I have what I need? And we could look at it and go, yes, but. And I give them something. And then the next day or 2 days later, I'd see them in the hallway and go, oh, my God, thank you very much. It worked. I got the interview. I got the press press box stuff. We're done. Right, Rob? I mean, how many times did you have that happen? You didn't Absolutely. Think anything of it. And somebody comes back and goes, you know that little thing you gave me? It made total sense.
Just having the right thing, and then the Ziploc bags, and then sometimes even pee touches on the Ziploc bags, which was really just going to, that was going to be my tip, is that if I could say invest in any one thing as an engineer, invest in labeling hardware and labels. The amount of time that we spend just kind of chasing our own tails when if we had labeled something from the start, it makes life a whole lot easier. And I was always impressed that, Chris actually, I think, usually did me one better on the labeling of the Ziplocs that I would usually scribble in my chicken scratch with a Sharpie. And he would often be a pro and print a label and stick it on the Ziploc so that everybody knew exactly where to find what they needed. And really, it was a true mark of professionalism and getting the job done in a quick way.
I can't wait to promote next week's show, by the way, on the next twert. Ziploc bags.
Ziploc bags.
Hefty touches. Or glad. The controversy
raging. Right, I know what I got for the next show. I know the props for next week. I know what they're going to be.
IP-enabled Ziploc.
So your tip was going to be?
Was labeling. Was really just investing in the right labeling hardware. The number of people that I've heard say, oh, well, I didn't label this because I didn't have this labeler or labels or whatever. They're not that expensive in the grand scheme of things.
So give me a couple specifics. Of course, there's the Brother P-Touch. And that's good for a lot of stuff. What else?
So there's the Brother P-Touch, and that comes in a lot of different flavors. I really like the flavors that can print more than one line on a tag, and you have to pay a tiny bit more for that, but they're really coming down in cost. In particular, cable labeling. And you've got the flavors that you can, of course, print the labels out, or just 8.5 by 11 sheets from Titan Hellerman and run them through your laser printer. Mm. something that Chris and I had also both defended in the facility that we worked in together was labeling both ends of a cable with what the thing does. Because inevitably, it's always great getting to the end of a cable and seeing that there's a label there, but it tells you what it does on that end and not the other side. So, not being able to find the other thing. So that's my my big, I think, kind of obvious tip is invest in labeling gear and use it.
I rarely add a tip, but today I've got one because it dovetails right in with what you guys are talking about. My tip of the week is this: silver Sharpies.
Silver Sharpies.
And because Chris, you've got that Sony bag. You know, the headphones bust. You got the Sony bag left over. Use of what you got. Of course, the downside is you can't see inside that bag, but you can label it, but not with a black Sharpie. That won't help you out at all. And the reason I know about silver Sharpies is because I have a 7-year-old boy who has to wear sometimes black colored clothing uniforms to school. And we have to put his name in it because he, how do you leave your shirt at school, kid? But he does. And so you put the name, you put Michael Harnack in silver Sharpie, and it's there permanently. So you black stuff, silver Sharpie. Yeah.
Good tip. Okay. Good tip.
Rob, thanks for being with us, man. I really
thanks
appreciate it. Good to see you. And thanks for the hospitality and your guy, Al, good hire.
Excellent hire.
He seems to know what he's doing. All right. We got to go. So thanks again to Al Reynolds, Rob Bertrand, and also Chris Tobin. Thank you for being with us, buddy. Appreciate it very much.
Yeah, no problem. And Rob, I'm going to be down in D.C., I think, in January, so I'm going to be giving you a call. We're swinging
come
by.
Come visit. We'd love to have you.
I will.
And our producer, Suncast, doing an amazing job today. I can't give you the details. Trust me, he is producing the show under duress. I really appreciate his creativity and just getting it done. Only Suncast could just get it done. Hey, we'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. I'm not sure who the guest will be, but it's going to be good. It always is. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye, everybody.